Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slidekick.
Yarr!
Today is March 5th, 2017, and this is GameBuoy.org video game podcast episode 133, Glamorous Nindy Rock and Roll, or GameBuoy.org video game podcast's Nintendo Switch Launch Blowout. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week we've got this much to talk about and just 2 hours to do it in. So get into it.
Yeah, we have word from Yoshinori Kitase-san, the producer of Final Fantasy VII Remake, that the main voice recording for the main part of the story is almost done. And Kitase-san gave a little bit of insight as to, you know, how fans who are expecting Cloud from Advent Children need to remember that this is Cloud in his prime, so that the performance, you know, is going to be different, which I thought was an interesting perspective.
Yeah, you know, I think that's actually very interesting. Plus, you know, it's just plain super interesting that the vocal recordings of this are almost done. Like, that's wild. It kind of makes me think that maybe the first chapter of the Final Fantasy VII Remake series is closer than we think.
Yeah, maybe so.
In other news, we also have word here from Aonuma-san that, in his personal opinion, Triforce Heroes is the most underrated of all Zelda games.
Hmm.
Have you played Triforce Heroes?
I have, and it's great. I would say something like, I don't know, Minish Cap would be more underrated.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, Minish Cap would probably be my pick. I really like Minish Cap. Gosh, it feels weird to be saying so much positive stuff about Zelda, but spoilers.
So it's interesting to hear his insight. We have news from Sony Interactive Entertainment that PSVR has sold 915,000 units worldwide as of February 19th. That's more than I thought.
Yeah. So apparently, now that they're reaching that 1 million unit sold benchmark, they have also declared that they will have over 100 new PSVR experiences in software for 2017. Of course, I think that's really exciting news. I have PSVR. I think it's really cool. It actually works as advertised, which I don't think the value of which can be overstated enough. Like, affordable VR in the marketplace is still pretty wild to me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were saying just, you know, that there maybe weren't enough experiences that were interesting for them, you know, making it worth the purchase right now. So,
oh yeah,
it's good that they're because we kind of were wondering, oh, is this just gonna fade away the way that other things do for Sony?
Well, and I have one, and I have that fear as well, because, you know, the games I have for it, they're all fun, they're all cute, but there still aren't really any like big experiences on it that like I feel like, oh, this is better than an experience I could have without it. So I am still waiting for that kind of like big ticket VR experience out of PSVR. Hopefully 2017 is the year.
Awesome.
We also have word here out of Tetsuya Nomura-san during the Magic 2017 event, where he basically showcased a couple new screenshots of Final Fantasy VII Remake and a new screenshot of Kingdom Hearts 3. The Final Fantasy VII Remake stuff, of course, looks gorgeous. And in an interview at that event, he sort of talked about how, you know, we don't really have context yet as fans, but after we play Final Fantasy VII Remake, we will understand why there won't really be continuity between the old compilation of Final Fantasy VII titles, Before Crisis, Crisis Core, and Dirge of Cerberus. How do you feel about that? It kind of sounds like that stuff isn't going to be canon anymore.
I'm not too concerned.
You know, the one thing I need to retain is Crisis Core. Before Crisis and Dirge of Cerberus, they can go. They could go. But Crisis Core is such a phenomenal experience. I'll be mad if they don't just HD remake it and make it like a bonus DLC chapter of 7 Remake or something.
Well,
like,
I mean,
it's
maybe
so
the,
good.
You know, the story beats.
Or bake it into the game.
There might be some story beats that still apply. My most interesting tidbit from this was that you know, one of his one of the things that he said about working on Kingdom Hearts is that Japanese people don't say no clearly, but I did, and it surprised everyone. So just how he is a little bit of a different sort of director than, you know, a lot of other Japanese game directors, maybe.
Indeed, I think that's very interesting. We also have word here that Resident Evil 7 is going to be getting a new free story DLC in the spring. This is called Not a Hero, and it features Chris Redfield in a story separate from the rest of the game. This is, of course, very exciting. Chris Redfield is a series favorite character. Lots of fans have also had a big crush on him for many years, including myself. Something interesting is that we sort of got his new character design here, and while I get that he's meant to look more like a real person than he ever has before, I already thought he looked like a real person in Resident Evil 5 and 6, and he just doesn't look quite as handsome now. He looks a little more generic because he's like a real actor whose face has been scanned, and teeth probably, given what we've heard about this. What's your take on both the DLC and Chris Redfield, Slaggy?
I think it's cool that it's just a separate story that, you know, because, you know, from what I've seen from RE7 is that it's very, you know,
focused
in a different way than a lot of the other ones.
Oh, yeah.
So this kind of ties it more into the main universe, maybe. And yeah, he's not quite as visually appealing as I'm used to him being.
Yeah. Frown. In more exciting news, Dragon Quest X will be headed to PS4 officially this summer in Japan, and the Nintendo Switch in the summer/fall. So that's definitely some really exciting stuff. I'm a big fan of Dragon Quest, as we all know, and I am now a big fan of the Nintendo Switch, as we will all know shortly.
We already knew.
So I'm excited to hear news of an MMO coming to the Nintendo Switch. We have previously had indication that we may also get Final Fantasy XIV on the Nintendo Switch. I'm really hoping that comes to pass.
Yeah. We have a reveal from Koei Tecmo that the final character for Musou Stars will be William Adams from Nioh.
Excellent. You know, that's exciting. Nioh is a series that I think, well, so far a game, but I think it's probably going to be a series that a lot of people, including some of y'all out there who listen to this show, are really into right now.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of positive things about it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'm happy to see this title grow quickly. And I think it's really cool that Koei Tecmo is really finally figuring out how to leverage their properties in favor of one another to really overall grow their audiences. I think we all win when they're proactive on stuff like this.
Indeed.
In terms of release dates, we have some updates coming for you. Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2 will be releasing on PS4, PS3, and PC on May 25th in Japan. Harvest Moon 64 has released on the Wii U eShop as a virtual console game. Japan's Switch eShop launched with Blaster Master Zero and a handful of Neo Geo games, including King of Fighters 98, Waku Waku 7, Shock Troopers, World Heroes Perfect, and Metal Slug 3. And Dead Rising 4 will be releasing on Steam on March 14th, 2017.
All right.
Indeed. With all that having been said, we have a couple of pieces of news here, so let's go over there.
News. 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 Oh my god. News. Yeah, so Square Enix has announced that Star Ocean Till the End of Time Director's Cut is going to be releasing on PS4 in full HD.
Ooh.
And yeah, I mean, it looks really good. I mean, it's like if there's a screenshot comparing the PS4 version and the PS2 version, and the PS2 version looks like, you know, like you have really poor eyesight, and then the PS4
that RuPaul's
version.
Drag Race Season 1 Vaseline filter.
Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, I still remember back when Till the End of Time was considered like a bad game, but I guess time makes fools of us all. Now that we've seen what Star Ocean can get like, we're all just like, please give us more Till the End of Time. Either way, I'm really stoked about this. I thought this was a great game. It has a fantastic plot twist in it. If you don't know about the plot of Till the End of Time, don't spoil yourself. Just hope this comes to North America and enjoy it when you play it.
Awesome.
We also have word here of a sequel to Final Fantasy Explorers. This is Final Fantasy Explorers Force, announced for smartphones. So far, it is only announced for smartphones, but I would expect this to hit a handheld console, either 3DS, Vita, or Nintendo Switch. Something really exciting is that the graphics are improved from the original release on 3DS Final Fantasy Explorers, and the art style is different. We no longer have the use of the super deformed character models, both both for the legendary summons and the new player classes, everything is being done with realistic proportions and higher polygon models.
Cool.
The confirmed jobs so far are Paladin, Ranger, Dragoon, White Mage, Monk, Black Mage, Thief, and Time Mage. I am stoked. I liked Explorers, and if this comes to North America, either on phone or console, I will definitely play it.
Excellent. Bandai Namco has announced that Chroma Squad, the Toku show sim, will be coming to PS4 and Xbox One this May.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, when we first heard word that this would be coming to console, it did have a PlayStation Vita release planned. Unfortunately, that has been canceled. It will no longer be coming to PlayStation Vita. Chroma Squad is already available on PC. I talked about it back in the day when it was still in the Kickstarter phase of its production. I totally backed it. I love Tokusatsu, and this game is just a real hoot. It's a grid-based, like, turn-based strategy game where you're basically, like, managing actors in a toku show, and you're, like, trying to use attacks and special attacks and props at, like, opportune turns in order to increase your ratings. It's just a really fun and very loving look at toku and strategy games. And
it's a clever concept.
I wholeheartedly recommend it. I'm a huge fan of this game. So with all of that having been said, we have two things we need to talk about before we talk about the Nintendo Switch itself. And that is, of course, my presence at the Nintendo Switch Preview Tour last week, where I got to play a Switch, a week before it came out, as well as play some games that are not yet available. We also, on February 28th, had a Nintendo Nindies Direct. That is, of course, a video presentation where Nintendo talks about upcoming indie titles coming to the Nintendo Switch. I am going to talk about both of these things real quick. Slackick, if you have any questions, I wholeheartedly encourage you to ask.
Why didn't I get an invite to the Nintendo Switch Preview Tour?
You know, I can't even answer that because Nintendo sent out invites even like to some children that I saw there. I'm like, how did all y'all children get in here and my co-host couldn't?
Yeah, but I have a Switch now, so it's kind of irrelevant, but...
Haters gonna hate. So, I want to talk a little bit about the Nintendo Switch Preview Tour. It was held in San Francisco. It was held in a really cool venue, too. It was like in one of the old hangars on the old piers.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a really cool space for that.
I thought they would have gone like with Moscone Center or something like that.
Oh, no, it was out in the cuts. But it was a really cool, wide-open space. They had the whole thing decked out with Nintendo Switch theming. Even on the outside, they had, like, gigantic banners for the Nintendo Switch. Then you went inside, and it was all decked out like a expo hall. All very, like, futuristic, bright colors, loud thumping dance music playing. They had a ton of games on display. I'm only going to talk about the ones I played. Obviously, they had Zelda, Bomberman, Fast Remix, Snipper Clips, Disgaea 5. I'm not really going to talk about those right this second because those are all out now in one form or another. But the games I played that are not out now are like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Sonic Mania, Ultra Street Fighter 2, and ARMS. While I'm still talking about the venue, though, they also had a bunch of Nintendo Switch branded like gummy snacks and goldfish snacks and pretzels and bottled water. It felt like a very modern event to be going to, and for that to be associated with a Nintendo hardware was actually really surprising. And that's something that I've really been thinking about a lot this weekend, now that I have my Switch in my hands, is that this console doesn't feel as family-focused or family-friendly as previous Nintendo consoles had. And so I'd like to ask your thought on that before I talk about these specific games.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely saw that with the way it's been marketed. I mean, there's the joke about, oh, it's a console for millennials playing games on roof tops, but and we've seen it promoted on like Jimmy Kimmel and stuff, and
was it Kimmel or Fallon? I always mix the Jimmys up.
One of the Jimmys, but you know, so like late night TV,
Russell,
which is
with Jimmys.
Like, I mean, for Reggie to go on late night TV to talk about the Nintendo Switch, it might have been Fallon now that I think of it, but like it's just crazy. Like, you know, like that's not the venue that we're really used to seeing Nintendo do outreach, but I think that, you know, they've recognized that it's a segment of the market that they have possibly, they felt that they've maybe lost over the past 10 years.
Or have been underserving.
So I think to really capture that audience, and I'll speak a little more of that when we talk about our midnight launch experiences, but, I think that it was a very intentional marketing shift.
Yeah, I do absolutely agree with you. So I'm going to talk about these four games. Psychic, if any questions come up, of course, ask them. You're sort of our audience surrogate here. here. Let's see. So
were the pretzels good?
Yes, the pretzels were good. I think they were rolled gold. So we played Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. That was really good. One thing I super noticed, I played it in tabletop mode using two of the Joy-Con as controllers. The setting was actually, and this is super funny because it was a perfect test use case. The setting for it was styled to look like a like airplane. So we were actually like playing in like airplane seats on like the seat back of the airplane seats in front of us. It worked perfectly. The small size of the console itself, and man, if you haven't seen one yet, these things are tiny.
Like iPad really, mini size or even smaller.
Smaller than an iPad mini, yeah. For sure. You know, but it fit perfectly in that setting. As far as Kart 8's performance goes, in two-player mode, it still seemed to be locked at 60 frames a second. When they're playing it on like a large blow-up screen that was, you know, some giant like 20-foot tall screen, literally dwarfing like actual humans standing next to it in docked mode, it was running in that display at 1080p signal at 60 frames a second in multiplayer.
Oh, wow.
It looked beautiful. So of course, any image when it's upscaled to that degree, you're going to notice some imperfections because 20 feet tall is just not a realistic TV size outside of that setting. But it looked gorgeous. And I'm sorry, you were saying?
So what you're saying is that the frame rate slowdown that we saw in multiplayer on Wii U is not an issue anymore?
That is absolutely correct.
Because it's definitely, you know, going from spending a lot of time playing single player and then playing multiplayer, like going back and forth when that game came out, it was very noticeable.
It was jarring.
But I mean, then like when we played Kart 8 a couple weeks ago, it was just like, oh, it's not that bad. But like seeing what it could look like, I'm very happy that I'm sure that the multiplayer experience is going to be a lot better. And I mean, the fact that I can just play it on my Switch and not have to, I mean, I assume I could do it that way, right?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Could I play it on my Switch instead of playing it on your screen on your TV?
You know, Bomberman supports that kind of play, so I assume Kart will, but they did not have units set up for that at the Switch.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. But I mean, they must. I have zero doubt. It's Kart. I'm sure they're going to have unit-to-unit multiplayer. Come on now. So I also played Sonic Mania. I'm happy to report that Sonic Mania is exactly what we all want it to be. Playing it literally felt like playing an old Sonic game that had just been unearthed somewhere and had new maps that I had never played before. But the feel and the level design is spot on to classic Sonic. It is not all zoomy, zoomy, go, go. It has exploration, but it is not all exploration. There are routes where you can play zoomy, zoomy, go, go if you choose. And that choice to me is a big part of this traditional Sonic level design. You know, I always hear Slagkick saying the old games weren't always zoom, zoom, go, go. But I kind of disagree. But for the occasional like Marble Hill Zone or something, most levels in classic Sonic were designed as sort of an either or. Like you could go this route for the exploration or this route for the speed. I am happy to say that my time with Sonic Mania made me feel like it very much follows in those routes. And I am more excited than ever to play Sonic Mania in full.
I'm interested. I mean, I know you only played the two levels that were available, right? The Green Hill and the Studiopolis Zone.
That is correct.
Having played just those two, has it caused you to think any differently about Sonic 4?
You know, I like Sonic 4 for what it was. I like it, or I should say I liked it a lot at the time. When I play it and try to replay it now, some of the issues with it are a little more apparent. I think I was just so happy to have console-based 2D Sonic back. I was willing to forgive more flaws than I really am now in a post-Sonic Mania world. That having been said, I still think Sonic 4 is overhated. I think it gets way more hate than it deserves. I think it's a solid, flawed experience. Generations is golden, man. If you could just give me Generations 2 and Sonic Mania, that's all I'm going to need this year. So let's hope that Sonic Project 2017 really is Generations 2. We also played Ultra Street Fighter 2. I played it in classic mode. I did not play with the HD remix sprites at all. That having been said, it was really weird to play Street Fighter 2 with new like rules going on and two new characters. It was kind of a trip, but the game played exactly how I would expect it to play. It was exactly what I wanted it to play like. It has taken some heat because I guess it's getting a retail release in North America and Japan at a $40 price point. A lot of people, I think, would have been more comfortable with a $20 price point. That having been said, man, I paid $80 for Street Fighter 2 in the Super Nintendo days multiple times because I bought Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Champion, Street Fighter 2 Super Turbo, or that wasn't Super Turbo, it was just Super. Either way, it wasn't Champion Edition either, it was Turbo. But regardless, my point is, for me, It's worth it. If you're a connoisseur of fighting games, a connoisseur of Street Fighter 2, do not knock this off as like a cheap clone of the
HD Remix.
HD Remix. Well, I was trying to think of a really negative adjective because HD Remix is not well loved for a lot of the physics changes it made, for a lot of just general changes it made. It was just sloppy. At least in classic sprite mode, Ultra SF2 does not feel that way at all. It feels really solid, and I'm super excited to play more. So I can't wait for that one. Any questions?
Do you think that it would end up having an Evo spot in the future?
I think that's an impossible question to answer right this moment, but I would be shocked if some of the sideboards weren't playing Ultra SF2.
Cool.
I definitely think it will be represented, just probably not on a main stage. So for me, the next one was sort of the biggest surprise here, and that's ARMS. So I played ARMS, and you know, first off, it has to be said, the dude who worked at the Switch event
had nice arms.
He was a really good looking guy, so I was just sort of like, oh, okay. But you know, he worked with us and got us through like the tutorial, taught us how to play. And I started playing, going into this, ARMS for me was sort of an like, that's a cool design, but I don't really know if I want to spend money on buying this. Now that I've played it, I'm 100% sold. ARMS plays so well. It is super well balanced. It is super fun. It is just a phenomenal game. I'm so impressed with ARMS, even in this early state. I cannot wait for the full version to come out. I had tweeted something like, playing is believing, and I think that's really true even still, because, you know, again, I hadn't anticipated buying this game for sure, and now I'm like, okay, let me get my pre-order in. So I was really impressed by ARMS.
That's great, because, you know, I think a lot of people were similarly skeptical about Splatoon. They're like, what's this? Squid Kids?
Oh yeah, it was very much like that.
So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, similar cartoony, colorful aesthetic as well. So, you know, I definitely see a lot of people excited about it, even ones who didn't go to the Switch event.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad to hear that it sounds like it's a solid game.
Yeah, I think the Splatoon parallel is a good one. I think you really hit the nail on the head there. So we also have this Nindies event to talk about. And the cool thing about this Nindies event, man, is that it was just like hit after hit. They ended up announcing, what, like 15 games, many of which we didn't even know were coming to Nintendo Switch prior this event. So I want to go down the list. Of course, we had the shock announcement of Runner 3. And, you know, part of the big reveal here is that Runner 3 is actually going to be a Switch exclusive, not just timed, not console exclusive. As far as we know, Runner 3 is a straight up Switch exclusive. For me, you know, that's big news. I was a big fan of the original Runner game back when it was a Bit Trip game. I loved Runner 2, obviously. So I am stoked beyond stoked for this news.
Yeah, that's great to see more Runner. I love Captain Video.
Me too. We also got the announcement of SteamWorld Dig 2 from Image and Form Games. We got the confirmation of Yooka-Laylee from Team 17 and Playtonic. And that, interestingly enough, they did not give us a release date or even window for beyond very soon. This has led people to believe that they might be trying to hit that April release date alongside the other platforms of Yooka-Laylee. They just don't want to commit themselves to a specific date yet. Any thoughts on that, Slaggy?
Oh, I hope that it hits. Otherwise, I'll just wait, because I've been looking forward to this one.
Yeah, me too. We also got the announcement that Blaster Master Zero is coming to Nintendo Switch in addition to 3DS, and it will be releasing in North America on March 9th. That is, of course, 1 week after it released in Japan, where it is already available on Nintendo Switch and 3DS. We also got the announcement of Pocket Rumble from Chucklefish Games and Cardboard Robot Games. That is scheduled to be a console exclusive for Nintendo Switch launching this March. Pocket Rumble is really cool because it is a homage to the old Neo Geo Pocket console, very much in the style of like Match of the Millennium or any of the Neo Poke fighting games, that same like super deformed art style.
Yeah.
It's just a really cute revisit of those games. And, you know, it's kind of surreal to me when I loaded up the Pocket Rumble page on Nintendo.com and saw on the Nintendo.com page them talking about harkening back to the Neo Geo Pocket. Like 2017, where Nintendo talks about the Neo Geo Pocket on their website. This is weird. We also had Flipping Death from Zoink Games. This is a timed exclusive for Nintendo Switch. It'll be releasing there before other platforms, as I understand it. It's a really cute, super stylized 2D puzzler that involves like shifting dimensions between like the world of the living and the world of the dead in order to solve problems for NPCs. I thought that was a really cool looking game. I'm really excited to play it. What was your thoughts, Slaggy?
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Excellent. We also had the announcement of Mr. Shifty from Tiny Build and Team Shifty. This is a stealth game where you play some kind of like secret agent that has the ability to like shift several feet in front of him with the press of a button. So it looks like the kind of game I'm really into, and I'm really excited to play it when it launches first on Nintendo Switch this April. We also had the announcement of Wargroove from Chucklefish Games. Wargroove got a lot of attention online because it very much appears to be an Advance Wars clone.
Oh, wow.
It looks just like Advance Wars. So I'm really excited because that's a kind of game that I would like to see more of. And it is scheduled to launch later this year. Slaggy, would you like to take this next one?
Yeah, so Stardew Valley is coming to the Switch this summer, and it will be the first of the consoles to support the multiplayer feature. And that's cool, because I definitely was, I didn't get around to Stardew Valley, so now, I'll just get it on Switch.
That's awesome. We also have Shakedown Hawaii from V-Blank. This is meant to be a 16-bit spiritual successor to Retro City Rampage. It's scheduled to launch first on the Nintendo Switch next month in April. That's a big deal. You know, a lot of people really loved Retro City Rampage, and the idea that they're going back to that and sort of doing like a 16-bit homage version now based in Hawaii, I think a lot of people are really stoked for this one. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, I think it's cute that they're, returning to that sort of style and, like you said, going 16-bit, because, you know, there's definitely a lot of love for the original, but, you know, Retro City Rampage had a lot of love, so I think this is going to be a real popular one, and glad that it's coming first to Switch.
Absolutely. We also have Graceful Explosion Machine from Vertex Pop. It's scheduled to launch first on Nintendo Switch this April. It looks like a really fun, like, bullet hell puzzler shooter game
with
rhythm elements. So yeah, very much up my alley. It looks like the kind of thing that could have been made by, like, Mizuguchi or someone.
Oh, yeah.
We also have Tumble Seed from AEIOWU. This is a really cool physics ball rolly type game. I don't know how to explain it, but it was really cute. It looked really cool. It's coming out this spring. It's puzzly while also being like sort of like twitchy. I recommend you just check out the trailer.
The levels are procedurally generated, right?
Are they? That I hadn't read that, but that sounds really cool.
I've heard it described as a rolly roguelike.
Ah, that's adorable.
Yeah, and the visual aesthetic of it is very cute.
There's also a special edition of Overcooked coming from Team 17 and Ghost Town Games. This will be later this year. Overcooked, of course, is the cooking sim that is meant for like multiplayer competition. It looks adorable, and everyone I know online who's played Overcooked has been talking about how excited they are for this release because I guess it's super fun. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, it sounds cute.
We also have The Escapists 2 coming from Team 17 and Moldy Tooth. That'll be releasing later this year. The Escapists is sort of like a top-down, light RPG style, like, heist game. I'm really excited for this one, too. Supposed to be a lot of fun in multiplayer, and I'm always looking for multiplayer games with RPG elements. We also have Goner coming from Raw Fury and Art in Heart. This is going to be the first, like, released console version of the game, so kind of like a timed exclusive, and we'll have extra content tailor-made for Nintendo Switch.
Cool.
We got Kingdom Two Crowns announced by Raw Fury and Noio. This is scheduled to release later this year. It's kind of like a kingdom sim, sort of like the kingdom elements in Fable 3, but like a whole game based around
them. Oh, nice.
It looks really fun. And another one I'm super, super, super excited for is a 2D action puzzle platformer called Dandara. This is coming from Raw Fury and Long Hat House. It's scheduled to launch it for Nintendo Switch this summer with exclusive features and functionality. And you play as a really awesome female POC character who is just completely boss and in charge. I'm super
That's
excited
awesome.
For
it. Sounds like your wheelhouse, really.
Absolutely. So let's move this discussion forward. Let's really start talking about the Nintendo Switch. I want to talk first, of course, about what does the Nintendo Switch really mean for gaming? And I wanted to start this off. I want to ask you, Slagkick, to discuss your use of Nintendo Switch and its portability form factor in the 3 days since the Nintendo Switch is released.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that I was able to go to the Best Buy Midnight launch, get my Switch, bring it home, have it set up in less than 3 minutes, in handheld mode and start playing a little bit of Zelda before I had to go to bed. I mean, that was definitely a different experience. I mean, you know, there's 3DS and everything, but, you know, to have that for a console and playing like a console quality title, not to bag on portable gaming, you know, but I mean, it's big. And then like bringing it over here to the SS Game Buoy and playing Zelda at the same time that you're playing Zelda and be like, oh, like, how do I do this puzzle? You know, like,
which you needed to do a few times.
Yes, I did. But still, you know, being able to have that experience was just very, very different, you know, it made it social. We were all sitting in the same room playing Zelda, you, me, and Sulker from Stabcast, but like we were all in different spots, but we were all like, oh, did you find this Korok seed or whatever? And so like to have that experience with a game like Zelda is very different, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you then, a lot of people are talking about how, you know, I guess this is the first entrant into console generation 9. If we are going to look at things that way, you know, Microsoft has pretty clearly said they don't intend on things being generational anymore.
Right.
Sony, on the other hand, doesn't seem quite so keen to get rid of that with, you know, the PlayStation 4 Pro still being PlayStation 4 Pro.
Right.
So I'd like to ask you, do you think in console generation 9, since the other two consoles, Scorpio and whatever,
PS5
presumably, do you think they're going to take any cues from the Nintendo Switch? And more appropriately, would you like them to?
Sony, I wouldn't be surprised, because they always seem to, like, I mean, and that's that being said, you know, they've kind of found a niche with PSVR, which is good for them. But, you know, like the thing that bothered me in the 360 and PS3 era was that at least with Kinect, even though now Kinect was kind of dead in the water, really, it tried to do something different, tried to like leverage a new technology, and Microsoft was being really ambitious with it. Move was just a glorified Wiimote. And, you know, we saw the rumors about a PlayStation Switch, so I couldn't help but wonder, you know, if they are going to try to. I mean, I've always felt that the market is best when each of the big three is doing something different and providing different experiences. And so
I strongly agree with that.
So I don't want them to. I mean, I can not really imagine what would sell me a PlayStation Switch, honestly. I'd rather see them try to innovate in their own way rather than be like, oh, well, we can do that too. I mean, it would just almost seem like, oh, well, we tried to do this with the Vita, but now Nintendo did it better, so we're trying again, you know? So I almost seem like it would not be a good decision for them. And as far as generations, like, you know, at this point, Nintendo is kind of off schedule with everyone, so, I mean, for me, it's almost irrelevant at this point, which is weird to think about, like, oh, console generations aren't really a thing anymore, but here we are, you know, a couple years down the road, and they're kind of it's not really a conversation that we're having as much, like, oh, next gen, you know, it's kind of at the point where those two machines are basically just glorified PCs, and, you know, now we have the Switch, which is something that's providing a brand new sort of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I continue to find the term generation useful, just because it's the easiest way to talk about a handful of different consoles. Although, you know, you say that Nintendo's timing is off, but the Scorpio is meant to launch this December still. Microsoft is still saying Scorpio is coming out this December.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, is it generation 8.5, whatever? You know, because there's be some people be like, oh, well, this is not even as powerful as a PS4, so really it should just be a Gen 8 console, and Wii U is a generation behind with its power, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, see, for me, talking about generations is more about just giving us, like, a frame of time to talk about, like, the consoles released in this time window. For me, it's more about function and categorization than it is straight up, like,
oh, in terms of, like,
some
of,
kind of
being
like
on the
tattling talking point, you know,
like being on the market at the same time.
Yeah. How do you feel about Nintendo's choice to go hybrid? I feel like you've covered this, but let's really hammer it out there. Moving forward, if this is the Nintendo one pillar and their additional pillars moving forward forward now are like their whole gaming pillar is Nintendo Switch, and then they have Amiibo as a pillar and mobile phones as a pillar. How would you feel about that kind of a business model?
I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I can see why they're trying to downplay the hybrid part of it, because I mean, I did basically reach a point where I'm like, oh, I should just plug in my AC adapter to your power cord here while I'm playing, or else I'm going to run out of battery real quick. But I mean, I think for like short trips, you know, it's definitely, it's portable. And I mean, it's amazing to play a game like Zelda on a screen that size. Like it blows me away. And if this is the direction that they're going to go, I think it's great. I'm all in. I mean, I think that it's the perfect synthesis of everything they've been doing for, I would say, you know, the past 10 years, but really the past 30 years, or 30, almost 35 years.
Holy moly.
Well, yeah, with, you know, with Famicom.
Absolutely, you're not wrong.
But, you know, I mean, I can definitely see, and I mean, I already see where people are like, oh, well, I'm just going to wait until the Switch 2 is announced 2 years later, because this is already a flop and it's not finished. It's like, you know, yes, they can improve on the battery life, but I mean, you know, I think it's brilliant. The way that you can pop it in and immediately be at home playing on the TV. You can take it out so you can play on the couch or go lay down in bed, you know, and keep playing your game. I mean, it's a completely new model. And I think that, you know, to go back with Sony and Microsoft, they're definitely going to have to think about what experience they're trying to provide. But I mean, I think it's great.
That's great. All right. Well, then let's move forward. And now that we've covered that, let's talk about the hardware. And of course, having a discussion on the hardware sort of starts with our experiences getting the hardware. I know that Slaggy had a very different hardware experience from me. But as far as availability of this thing goes, the midnight launches were pretty interesting. I know that at my local Best Buy, where myself and Sulker ordered our Switches, we were in a pre-order line, and there was both a line for pre-orders and for stragglers who were trying to get their Switches but didn't pre-order. Our pre-order line ended up only being 30 people, which I think is because they only took 30 pre-orders. And the non-pre-order line was over 100. They took us in 10 at a time. The pre-order folks had first hit at all of the accessories, games, add-ons of any kind you can think of. It was super well organized, and I was back home with my Switch by 12:30, which I thought was fantastic. It was the perfect midnight launch experience. Very much like, man, this is how all midnight launches should be run. What about you? What was the availability and overall situation like at your midnight launch?
You know, it's interesting because mine was handled a little bit differently. They didn't split up the line until the doors started to open, which was a little bit interesting of a choice, especially since we were, you know, communicating back and forth. I'm like, mine doesn't have a separate line yet. And you're just like, really? Mine does. And the accessories, Amiibo, and everything were first come, first serve. So even though I was like maybe eighth in line for pre-orders or so, by the time I even just got into the store and up to where the table was with stuff on it, Pro controllers were all gone. Amiibo were all gone. There was very little left, you know, in terms of like the more limited stuff. There were plenty of extra Joy-Con and like charging grips and stuff, but you know, accessories were pretty much picked over at that point. So that was a little disappointing, but I mean, once I was in and in the separate line, you know, it only took a few minutes to get there and then get my order. And then I was also home by like 12:30. So, I mean, overall, I mean, the only other time I've really done something like that was camping out for the Wii, which was, you know, I would camped out from like, you know, 11 p.m. to like 8, and then, you know,
8 a.m.
8 a.m., yeah. And then,
which I did a similar wait for my Wii.
Right. So, you know, it's definitely comparing it to that was interesting. But, you know, the thing that was crazy is that thinking back to the Wii, there were only about maybe 20 per store because I got mine at a Walmart. And so I remember, you know, I was like 18th in line, I think. And so, I mean, the line pretty much, once people saw it was too long, they were kind of just like, oh, you know. But, I mean, I was definitely, before I got into the store and got into the separate pre-order line, I was probably like 80th in line.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, it was all, you know, young adults in their, you know, 20s to 30s, maybe 40s, you know. So it wasn't like there were no families there being like, oh, we gotta get our Switch, you know. So it was just, it definitely kind of reinforced the audience that it was targeting. And just based on that, I mean, you know, there's definitely was a demand for it. And, you know, I saw a lot of people walking out with special edition Zeldas and stuff. So, I mean, you know, definitely a hunger for this console.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Excellent. And that sort of does bring us to the availability. Something interesting is that in the lead up to release, it looked like the Nintendo Switch was going to be really hard to find. But what I'm seeing, and I don't know if this has a whole lot to do with the console itself or how Nintendo has supplied their channels, but it seems that you can actually still, if you're lucky, find Switch units in stores. It looks like most of the sellouts are happening immediately online, which is why I wonder if this isn't simply due to the way that people shop a little differently now than they have in years past at console launches. Stores where, you know, if you can go in and view their physical product, like Targets or what have you, Best Buys, people are still reporting finding them, even though all of their online services are literally selling out within minutes, even at this time that we're recording late Sunday night. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of a change from what we normally see at hardware launches, and I'm wondering if that isn't going to be the new normal going forward, simply because I think people in the modern day are less and less inclined to go out and actually physically shop for things like this. So I want to talk a little bit about the hardware itself, Slaggy. I know that you've said that you've been primarily playing it in handheld mode.
Yeah, I haven't even hooked it up to TV yet.
Excellent. And I actually have, surprisingly to myself, because I took Friday off, I've been playing mostly on my TV. Tomorrow will be my first real, like, going to work, taking my Switch with me, playing in the office and on the train going in and out. So I'm really excited about that, but I can't quite speak to it yet. Let me ask you, what are your thoughts on the build quality of the unit, of the Joy-Cons? What are your thoughts on the actual hardware itself?
I mean, I think it's a really solid and sleek piece of hardware. I was really impressed with the way that the Joy-Cons just, like, snap in and lock in. And I also, to take a little bit of a break, I use the Puppy controller, which, I mean, I guess it's the Joy-Con grip, right? But, you know, the Puppy controller.
Yeah, the Puppy controller.
And because I haven't had the chance to play with the Pro controller yet, I've heard universally that once you play the Pro controller, going to Puppy controller, it just feels a little bit weird and awkward just because the Pro controller is that good. But, I mean, I think Puppy controller, as far as controllers go, feels fine. And again, just the way that the Joy-Cons snap in, like, it just, it works so well. I mean, like, it's just like, I mean, I know the joke is, oh, they're little Wiimotes that, you know, you tape on the end, but it's just, it's like taking the idea of the Wiimotes and being like, oh, you can use it like a Wiimote, but, you know, like, it also can just snap on and do this. Like, I mean, obviously we've known about the functionality for months at this point, but just actually having it and, you know, like, for example, when we played Bomberman, like, putting it into the Joy-Con grip to play with that instead of, you know, because I don't have a Bomberman cart, so I couldn't play on my Switch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just super seamless syncing my Joy-Cons to your Switch. I was like, wow, it's already done. Like, you know, so...
we synced it just by switching them into my Switch and then out. It took literally 10 seconds. It was probably the easiest pairing we've ever done in all of the years we've been doing multiplayer gaming here at the SS Game Buoy.
Yeah, and I mean, the way it switches from portable to TV, I mean, I saw it. I mean, I didn't do it myself, but, you know, it's amazing how fast that is.
Oh, dude, it's literally 2 or 3 seconds.
And like,
it takes longer for my TV to catch up the video signal than it does the actual unit to output video.
And just like loading games, and the UI is so speedy. I think it's great.
No, and it's funny, you know, I saw a lot of people complaining about the lack of functionality that I think a lot of us have come to take for granted. Stuff like loading MP3s off of USB or a memory stick, you know, looking at YouTube and internet browsing and stuff. But to me, I have to be honest, now that I've had the hardware in my hands, I'm fine not having that if it means the UI can continue to be this snappy. Something that really bothered me about the Nintendo Wii U and even the 3DS, someone on my Twitter feed was just complaining about how, you know, a lot of people on their commute don't empty out their 3DS street passes that often. And I was like, you know, dude, I don't want to, because it takes so long to load into the various different menus, to get into the right application, to get into the application, then actually, like, process all of your street passes, and then exit, and then get back into your game that you were playing that has now ended because you had to load into the street pass app. All of that stuff ends up taking like 10 minutes just to clear out my street passes. Like, that is too much time. Having this new user interface where it's so snappy and you can go from like one game to another game in literally 20 seconds is so nice. You know, obviously I miss those other features to some degree. I probably myself wouldn't use them very often, but I appreciate that some people would. It definitely sucks to lose features for those people. But what we get out of it, if that's why we have such a snappy UI, well, I'm pretty happy about it because, man, this UI sings.
Yeah, and it's very minimalist in a very nice way.
It's aesthetically pleasing.
It is.
So with all that having been said, you know, I've been playing mostly with the Pro Controller. It's very light, but still feels very solid. It feels like a step up from the Wii U Pro Controller, and I already thought that was one of the best controllers I've ever held.
It was a good controller, yeah.
So I think the Switch Pro Controller is just phenomenal. Interesting playing Switch games on my TV because the user interface, like the OS UI, is like kind of, and maybe it's because I have a 4K TV that's pretty large, but like the image is like a little blurry, almost like the UI elements are like running at 720 or something, or being rendered at 720. That having been said, actually in game, I still think it all looks glorious. So I was still really happy. I have heard, you know, that apparently if you're really looking with a fine tooth comb at Zelda, for example, it apparently runs at a slightly more solid frame rate than playing it on TV does. Even though the TV is, or on the dock, I should say, is rendering a 900p image, and the handheld version is rendering a 720p image. It hasn't bothered me. I've played Zelda mostly on my TV. I think it's a gorgeous game. It has had some very slight frame rate hitching, and I notice when it happens. I just don't care because the game is so good. Which actually brings us to the perfect point, you know. Something really cool happened the day that the Switch came out, and that was that we learned that it is very, very easy to buy Japanese games from the Japanese eShop and play them on a North American Switch. Very similar to the PS4, you just make a user account in that language and it will just connect to that store. As a result, and all profiles on that console will be able to play all of the games purchased on that console, even though purchases are tied to your accounts and can be restored to additional consoles. So it's sort of like a best of the both worlds of Nintendo's old strategy and now a more current and modern strategy. I'm really enjoying that, and you know, something cool is that one of my most anticipated Switch games, Disgaea 5, is coming out in North America in May, like on the 25th or something, I think. But it was out on launch day in Japan. So I downloaded it, and when I switched to my English language profile, the game is in English in its entirety. So I got the best of both worlds. I already have Disgaea 5. I've already started a game and everything. It's very cool.
That's great.
And in fact, that is also true for like Blaster Master Zero. If you download it off the Japanese store, load it with an English language profile, the game will be in English. It seems that the store downloads contain all of the versions of the games from all of the world stores, and it selects your language options based on what profile you're logging into.
That's
so it's kind of, yeah, a brave, exciting world for importers. We're going to have access to a lot of really cool stuff. Stuff like the Neo Geo games that we mentioned earlier in our news segment. I've already downloaded a couple of those because they're not available in the North American eShop yet, although they will be. I decided not to wait, and I've already got them.
It's awesome.
So, Slaggy, what of the Switch games that I have played so far, are there any that you have, are there any other ones that you have played?
No.
All right, well then let's talk here. We're going to talk about Zelda last because I think that's the big talking point, obviously. Let's start off with Bomberman. Bomberman, of course, a $50 game created in Unity, very traditional Bomberman experience. I've seen a lot of complaint about it online for being a bare bones presentation and having slightly stiff controls. For that, I kind of agree with both of these statements. The presentation is a little bare bones. The graphics are certainly not anything particularly special, but I myself still find it to be a very authentic and pleasant Bomberman experience because, honestly, old Bomberman was a stiff gameplay experience.
Yeah.
With that in mind, Saigi, I'd like to ask, what do you think of Bomberman?
I think it was good. I hate to be one of those I wouldn't pay $50 people for it, but you know, it's a lot of fun, and I'm glad that we have the opportunity to play it, and I think it's a solid implementation, but again, maybe not a must have unless you're a real Bomber fan.
You know, and I have to be honest, half of why I was buying it is because I want Konami to know that, like, there's a lot of us out here that love your legacy games and we are willing to give you money. For me, buying that was half my Bomberman fandom and half, like, wanting to prove the point to Konami.
Yeah.
So then I would like to ask you, what about Fast Remix? Did you play that at all?
Yeah. It's an interesting, very interesting concept. I'm not very good at it, but it's a very pretty game, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, something that I'm really shocked about is how pretty it is running at 60 frames a second. I don't really consider myself a frame rate nut. Like, some people are obsessed with with frame rates. I'm not typically one of them, but this game, you know, there's like no slowdown. It just looks gorgeous. So it's a fun experience. You know, that one was $20 on the eShop. I know that you're not typically a racing person, but that seems like a hell of a deal to me because it's such like a tech showpiece game.
Yeah.
Is that one that you think you'll play any more of?
I mean, I would definitely be down to play it over here. I don't know if I would like spend a lot of time, especially with kart coming up. I mean, I'm more of a kart racer, so, you know.
Excellent, excellent. Snipper Clips. Have you played Snipper Clips yet?
I have not had a chance to play Snipper Clips yet.
Okay, Snipper Clips is so charming. It is a two-player co-op puzzler. I actually don't know if there's a non-two-player version. I've only played it two-player, but it's just a lot of fun, really ingenious design. It very much feels like a Nintendo game. As I understand it, it's an indie game that they sort of ended up pitching in on and like guiding that way that Nintendo sometimes does. It just turned out to be a real phenomenal experience. I'm really surprised and impressed by it. It's a $20 eShop game. I think it's completely worth playing.
Yeah, I saw the preview of it a few weeks ago, and it looks very cute.
I believe there's already a demo up on the eShop for that, and I believe it's the same demo that they've had at like the Nintendo Switch preview event.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, you can dig into that. Disgaea 5, I believe you have not played.
I have not played, but I mean, Disgaea is Disgaea, so.
Exactly. And Disgaea 5 on Switch is pretty much identical to Disgaea 5 on PlayStation 4, except with some new content. That is, some DLC integrated into the core game that never made it to PlayStation 4 in North America.
Oh, wow.
I will say it is lacking. There were some like anime and manga crossover promo free DLC in Japan. None of that is present, unfortunately.
That makes sense, though. Licensing, etc.
Exactly. But otherwise, it is Disgaea 5 in your pocket, which is, at least for some of us, like myself, all I've ever wanted. So I am incredibly happy. You may recall, I have been predicting and everything like that Disgaea would come to the Nintendo Switch. As soon as it was confirmed that it was like portable, or that we even started to get like the heavy rumors from Emily Rogers and stuff, I was like, well, Atlus is going to have to release that somewhere. Or not Atlus, Nipponichi is going to have to release that somewhere. Right. It's not going to be the Vita, so it's going to have to be the Switch
also,
by default.
Atlus with their Persona Goldens, basically.
Ah, well, yeah, that is also where I think that's going to go. But I think we'll see a very similar trajectory on that as long as this thing does well in Japan, which by all indications, it is doing. The Japanese market does seem to be engaging with this thing, and I think that's good for all of us. Disgaea 5, super solid implementation. I'm glad I didn't wait for the North American release, but do keep in mind, games tend to be more expensive in Japan, so, you know, if you just want to pay the $60 for it or less with your 20% off at Best Buy or Amazon, I wouldn't blame you. For me, though, it made the most sense to get this right meow. So, I also, of course, have a couple of Neo Geo games, King of Fighters 98 and Metal Slug 3. Now, on this one, I have to be honest, it's, the emulation quality isn't quite where I would want it to be. As far as, like, accurate frame cycles and everything, that is all intact. It slows down at the places the games would slow down on Neo hardware. But there's actually, like, really weird things happening with, like, the color. It's, like, super desaturated. Certain, like, UI elements are, like, really weirdly and incorrectly scaled. And I actually was playing this on my TV and thinking that, like, this looks wrong. So I loaded up GAF to see if people were talking about it there. And sure enough, they were. A little disappointing for someone like me who is really into, like, Neo Geo culture. I think for most of you out there, it would probably be an accurate enough representation. Certainly more accurate than a lot of previous releases. Just not up to the par that Nintendo set with the amazing Neo Geo Virtual Console releases, which were perfect.
It makes you really appreciate Virtual Console.
Aw, dude, that Wii Virtual Console is still unparalleled in so many ways. Well, then let's get to the part of the discussion that you were certainly waiting for, Slaggy.
1-2 Switch?
maybe some of y'all out there in Internet Radio Land are waiting for. I ended up canceling my 1-2 Switch pre-order. I haven't bought it yet.
Did you play it at the event?
You know, I didn't, but I watched people play it, and it was like, what they're doing is fun, and it does look like it's working as advertised. I just don't know if I want to pay $50 for that. And, you know, I always talk here about, like, I don't see... I try not to talk about game costs when talking about, like, my experience with games or the value of the games themselves, but something I have learned is that there are experiences I'm just not inclined to pay $50 for. I try not to leverage that against the software itself. I still try to view the software fairly, but for me, 1-2 Switch doesn't look like a game that I want to pay $50 for. It looks like a game that I will get when I can find it for $25 to $30, and I kind of get the sense that it ain't going to be that long for me to find that.
It's just interesting because it really does seem like it should have been a pack-in game.
Yeah, I am increasingly agreeing there, especially having seen people play it. It was like, this feels like watching people play Wii Sports, and I would not have paid money for Wii Sports either, even if I thought it was a fantastic game. It's just so shallow, and that was how I felt about 1-2 Switch as well. So Zelda is pretty much the opposite of shallow. Slaggy, I've been talking a lot this episode. I would really like you to talk about Zelda for a few minutes.
I mean, the thing that's really amazing about this Zelda is that it kind of takes the best parts of every other Zelda game up to this point. I mean, at least the mainline ones. You know, it has the very, like, exploration focus of Zelda 1, but then, you know, it almost, I described it last night as feeling, it feels like it's the game that Nintendo wanted to make when they made Twilight Princess, but the technology just wasn't there yet, or maybe, like, gaming even wasn't quite there yet. You know, it's just, it's really, I mean, it's huge focus on exploration. I love the shrines, they're like just like little mini puzzles. It's just, it's very interesting how in some ways it's a very different experience from something like Ocarina, even though it very obviously builds off of what Ocarina started. Like for example, the shrines are, you know, what you would expect a one room of one of the bigger dungeons to be, but then, oh, you're done. It's just one puzzle using one of the tools, which are runes in this game, and or maybe multiple runes in some of them. But, you know, so that's really interesting because, you know, you can just get a little bite-sized Zelda puzzle and then you're done. Like, oh, you know, I don't have that much time. I can go play a shrine and still feel like I've got, you know, that experience that I would get from doing something in, like, the water temple or whatever. And then I have finished one of the, you know, proper dungeons, and I won't spoil how that really works, but it's really interesting how it seems like at least the dungeon that I am in right now, it's kind of just like one big puzzle that, you know, so for example, I'm in the water dungeon, for lack of a better word, and it involves, you know, changing, you know, the water flow so that there are like water wheels turning, which you would expect, but you know, it definitely feels different from something like Ocarina of Time, where you would go into a room, oh, you've got to clear out these Lizalfos first, and then, you know, get a treasure chest with 5 rupees. You know, it's very interesting how I feel like combat is, at least where I'm at, not as heavy of a focus.
Yeah, you know, I'm quite a ways further than you are, and I will say, in later areas and dungeons, the combat is more stringent, it's more exacting, so I definitely do think that there remains a combat focus, just, it is different, because I used to feel like when I was playing Zelda, I'd walk into a room, and step one to a room, clear out all the enemies, and then step two, figure out the puzzle if there is one. Whereas now, it's sort of the opposite. Every room is like, figure out the puzzle and then kill enemies if there are any present, which usually there aren't. I do agree with you. I just think that it's sort of different when there are enemies. It's not just mindless hit B, hit B, hit B. Like every encounter, because there are fewer of them, but they're tuned a little more exacting, each one of them is a little bit more of a life and death situation. And I ended up feeling, coming away from it, that like every little encampment of bokoblins I found, every time I entered a dungeon room and saw a mini guardian, these all became like standout highlight moments for me, rather than sort of a rote mash B until the enemies are dead and then I can get to the point of this room.
Right, which is even different from Zelda 1, which, I mean, you know, Zelda 1 was kind of like enemies, and then maybe there's a block that you push or a bush that you... So in like some ways, you know, there wasn't a lot of puzzle in Zelda 1, you know, to kind of... And I keep going back to Zelda 1 because in some ways it very much feels like that. It's this very kind of like, I don't want to say sparse world because it's very, very vast, but, you know, it seems very like sparsely populated, and there's kind of like, you know, story reasons for that for sure. But you know, for example, there's like on every screen of, I mean, I think that's just the way that, you know, NES worked, but every screen of Zelda had like, you know, enemies pretty much. But you could go for a while without seeing bokoblins or whatever, but then, you know, you come across them and then like, oh, they're actually kind of put up a tough fight. Or like, I mean, for me, what's really interesting is like finding ways to completely go around or avoid combat. I mean, it's very different in that way. I mean, in some ways it feels like it shares some DNA with like an Assassin's Creed almost.
Oh yeah.
Where there's more than one way to, you know, approach an area or some enemies. You know, you could throw bombs from a cliff or whatever. You could snipe them with your arrows. You could just go in and melee. Although I have to say, with Assassin's Creed, in most cases you try to do a clean routine assassination, then they'd be like, hey, and then you'd have to end up doing really poor melee combat, which never worked in Assassin's Creed for me. I always thought the melee was really bad, but
yeah, I could never make the combat in Assassin's Creed work. I've always heard from people that it's really good, but I have never been able to get it to be good.
It's not really that good. And I mean, I'm amazed with how much feels just right about it and how much was like, oh, that's a change that really this series really needed.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, something that I think people have noted is that everything feels a lot looser. Previous Zelda games in 3D, you know, they've used a somewhat typical, if older and antiquated, like nav mesh layout where everything is basically on a grid or like a three-dimensional grid mapped into the game world. Whereas this one is more more physics based. So, you know, it's not like you can walk here, you can walk here, you cannot walk here. Like, this is physics based. You can walk on basically everything to varying degrees of success. And this sort of ties into what you were saying, Slaggy, about how, you know, you can do any, you know, you can solve things any way you want. You don't have to like do Nintendo's rigid definition of solution because of that physics based world. And what Nintendo is calling their chemistry based world of how items interact with one another, which to me, it really does open up a whole new world. It used to be that like if there was a puzzle in a Zelda game, you had to finish it a very set way. Like you had to do X to Y to Z, period.
Gotta jump on this block, use your arrow, shoot the eyeball, and then go over to that platform before the timer runs out. Oh, you didn't do it. Sorry.
Yeah, now it's you know, if the objective is get this ball in that hole, while there might be a solution that Nintendo intends for you to take, any solution will work as long as that ball gets in that hole. That means skipping entire puzzles sometimes. That means that, you know, rather than going through like a whole labyrinthine complex of fans blowing air, you know, a simple well-placed jump glide from a high point might just solve everything. You know, rather than doing, you know, tricksy puzzles involving lighting one torch to light another torch to light another torch that are on like a rotating mechanism, if you have five fire arrows, you can just light all the torches that way and it will work just as well. The game is completely revitalized by that sense of freedom. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on this whole rambly talking point, but I just wanted to build on what you were saying, Slaggy, that it, like, the whole world feels so organic and alive because of this freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It really encourages you to think and problem solve outside of the box and in just any way that is most natural for you as a player. So for me, you know, like, I was watching you play a little, and like, you're very like, run, get on your horse, just go from point A to point B. I'm all about like jumping on the trees in order to get a good vantage point, and then like using my parasail glider or whatever, climbing onto every mountain I can see, and very rarely just running on the ground. And yet we're both still getting from point A to point B. I think it's really cool. I don't think Zelda's ever done anything like that before.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes you really realize how a game like Ocarina of Time, which up to this point was considered like the best game ever, basically, Ocarina is a very small game. I mean, in terms of its world, like if you think of the distance from Hyrule Castle to Kakariko Village in like a game like Ocarina, it may have seemed long
like,
then, but
yeah, but now it's like, okay, well, that's a 40 second ride on Epona.
Yeah, but I mean, it took me like, you know, a good maybe 20 minutes or so to find like, oh, I've got to go climb around here and find the path over here. And so I mean, it makes Hyrule feel, you know, a lot more expansive. And then the other thing I have to say is that, you know, the characters I've come across, because, you know, I've come across like two towns so far, and then the Zora's Domain, which, I mean, I don't think that's too much of a spoiler. It's Zora's Domain, you know, it's going to be in most of the mainline Zelda games. But, you know, the characters still very much have like a very Zelda personality, like the humor. And I watched you play a little bit in the Gerudo Desert. You know, there's definitely the series trademark humor is there, and the whimsy. And that's something that I think that I've seen some people who aren't super far into it yet be like, oh, this just doesn't feel like a Zelda game. But no, I mean, definitely once you get into, you know, these areas and you're, you know, interacting with the characters, it's very much got that same, you know, charm. And the thing that, I mean, I think my final note about it is that as someone who would still have been inclined up to a week ago to say, yeah, Ocarina is one of the best games of all time, even though, yes, it's a little outdated. I mean, I feel like now we can say, okay, there's a new Torchbearer. Like, I feel like it's finally, the series has finally like evolved enough from Ocarina so that doesn't have to be the standard bearer for for, you know, Zelda anymore.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have always considered myself not a huge fan of the Zelda series. We've talked about it here hundreds of times over the years. I don't really want to focus on that. I want to focus on the fact that this game's been out for 3 days, and I've put more than 20 hours into it already. I cannot put this thing down. I am hard-pressed to think of a game in the last few years that I have loved more than Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. It's hard for me to imagine any other game coming out this year that's going to be better. Like, I feel like this is already pretty much a shoo-in for Game of the Year. And it's March, so that's wild. Really, really excited, though, to see more of the game. I feel like I'm not even quite halfway through yet, which is just insane to me. I just, even while we're sitting here recording, I'm like having to fight myself to not grab my Switch and start playing, which is a thing I could do because it's portable.
Right.
So I am impressed beyond impressed by Zelda Breath of the Wild. I'm really excited to be playing it on the Nintendo Switch. We will probably do a Zelda Breath of the Wild episode at some point just to talk about the game in a month or two after people have had a chance to play it and spoilers are a little less verboten. Unlike most Zelda games, I actually do think the less you go into it knowing, the better. It does some really interesting things that I wouldn't want to be responsible for spoiling anyone on.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about Zelda?
No, it's just that it does enough that makes it still feel very Zelda. You know, it's very much kind of like the evolution of what Ocarina wanted to be. I mean, in some ways it almost, at first, at times I was like, is this kind of a remake of Zelda 1 in some ways? I mean, it's not really, but I mean, I really appreciated the what it takes from every Zelda, and that, you know, the Hyrule feels like it could be connected to these other Hyrules, or before I was kind of like, oh, really? It's the same Hyrule, you know, but then generations later, it like actually made me think of like the Zelda timeline and be like, okay, I actually kind of can appreciate this for what it is. You know, that being said, I am excited to see where the next game in the series will take it. I definitely could see a few minor quality of life changes that could make it even better. And I was thinking today, like, you know, like, oh, Zora's Domain, very wet, water, blah, blah, blah. I was just thinking about how Majora's Mask really kind of flipped the environments where, you know, the Zoras were in a beach and the Gorons were in the snow and stuff. And like, I was kind of like, oh, that was like a really, like, it made me really appreciate how clever that was in Majora's Mask. So what I would love to see next is what they've done with the game design of Breath of the Wild with something maybe a little more daring like Wind Waker. I mean, maybe not quite that far, but, you know, just kind of like taking it now, going and seeing, like, trying out a little different flavor.
Well, you know, Aonuma-san has now said that he, in the ending phases of development, began to see ways that he can make the next Zelda even better than Breath of the Wild.
Oh, wow.
And that he already has ideas. He's, like, revitalized to do another game now. What do you think of that? Like, especially, you know, he sort of made reference to building on the base of what they already have. How would you feel about a Majora's Mask style, like, second look at this kind of game design?
Yeah, I mean, it would be very interesting because, I mean, in a way, we didn't really get a Wii U Zelda because this was it. I mean, we had the HD, you know, but still, you know, we didn't really have
it. Yeah, for a console that didn't get a Zelda release, it sure did get three releases.
Yes, but I mean, you know, two of them were GameCube titles and one is a Switch title. So, one was a GameCube and a Wii title. So, I mean, you know, in the way that Twilight Princess was kind of GameCube and Wii, you know, I consider it a little bit more of a Switch title. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe that's a silly distinction, but yeah, to think that maybe in three more years, oh, we've got another Zelda on Switch. Like, I was figuring it, like, you know, oh, 5-6 years between Zeldas. But, no, bring it on.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, that about wraps it up for our discussion on Zelda, which also about wraps it up for our discussion on the Nintendo Switch. I would like to ask, of course, if you have any closing thoughts. How do you feel about the Nintendo Switch overall? What would you like to see come to it next? That sort of stuff.
I'm really happy with my Switch. For someone who didn't get to have the prior hands-on at all, I was very pleased and very satisfied with it. And I'm really looking forward to spending more time with it. I know there's a lot of doubt out there about whether it's worth it right now, or it feels unfinished or whatever. I'm very happy with mine. So, I mean, that's, you know, definitely my bias, but, you know, you out there in Radioland have to do your own, you know, have to follow your own gut instinct, but I'm very happy and I do not regret my purchase at all.
Well, that is awesome to hear. here. I feel pretty similar here. I like my Switch a lot. I don't actually have a lot of concerns with it at this point. It plays games that I want to play. I think they all look pretty good. I don't know. I'm really happy with it. I'm sort of failing to see where some of the concern that I'm seeing online is, where people are kind of, I don't want to say bagging on it, but it seems like they're bagging on it. And I guess I'm just not entirely sure why.
A lot of the gaming journalism is kind of like, you should wait.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, I feel like a lot of those kinds of articles were maybe written before the console's day one patch went out. The day one patch went out literally on day one and added a lot of features and functionalities that are essential to a console in 2017. Stuff like, you know, social media, sharing screenshots, which, by the way, works exactly as intended. And in fact, has like really cute little tools to like add words or to add text to
like
your images.
Miitomo style, right?
Miitomo style, yeah. But it's just so convenient and easy. And I actually find it to be more fun to use than the PlayStation 4's image share functionality,
which is a little clunky.
Right? Let's see, that the eShop access was added in the day one patch. So, you know, support for SD cards was added in the day one patch. They clearly came in hot with this launch, which is interesting and surprising to me. But at least in the consumer version, I've had no problems yet. I know that people were talking online about like having Joy-Con connectivity issues. I've played games with Joy-Cons here on the TV, Bomberman in particular. I had no connectivity issues. I'm not saying those issues are irrelevant. I'm not saying they're non-existent. I am saying I haven't experienced them. So for me, it's been a really pleasant and positive experience. I've had a great time with my Switch. I'm super happy with it.
Excellent. Well, I think we probably covered what's up this week pretty much.
Yeah. So
I'm going to move on to the social links.
Perfect.
So our social links question of the week was, this week the Nintendo Switch launches. What are your thoughts on so far on this much anticipated handheld console hybrid? We have Colin M saying, I'm so excited that I bought two by mistake. Other than that, I'm more excited for the new Zelda than I am for the system itself. Having it be portable was the main reason I purchased it. If it was another home-only console, I don't think I would have bought two at launch. Ken C says, can't wait. To give you some perspective, this feedback was all prior to the launch. Mike I says, I'm totally hyped for it. Can't wait for my pre-order to arrive with BOTW. And Francisco U says, I really, 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 really want it. And I want it. You guys want it? I fucking want it too. So definitely seen, I've seen a lot of people online on Twitter and stuff posting about their Switch. Just seems like it's really, you know, overall been something that people are excited about. I know like our friends are like, oh, I want a Switch. They kind of didn't jump on the pre-order wagon, but they're kind of like, oh, now I really want one. So I think it's off to a good start. And with that, we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
You can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
And I guess it's time to shout out.
Yeah, you can hear us streaming over at the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com. You can also hear such fantastic shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series upon which it's based out of Japan. Last but not least, you can also hear the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In non-VOG shows, you can check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and X Nation, their sister show, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd be remiss not to mention Reading is Fundamental, which Slaggy hosts, I feature, as well as Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. We talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, which means a new season is starting up. You better start your engines. Slaggy, take us to a game bar!
Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with VG Realness, that's Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, La Palanca Podcast Bori Potter, Gay Gamers Latinoamericanos in Espanol, the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, and the Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them.
I'd also back!
Like, yes! I'd like to also direct you to our sister shows, our sister ship, the SS Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar but most definitely should be, and stabcast.org or Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast. Your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon, the podcast that Spike and I do with Trainer Sulker. Wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors quite a while back now, but will forever be pouring out of 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain in celebration. Yee-hee-hee! And I mean, one last thing I want to say about Zelda, though, is that it's really interesting how the music's a lot more minimal in this. I meant to say that one during our discussion.
Yeah.
It very much reminds me of the way that Japanese cinema and anime, like, use music and silence very intentionally, where a Western audiences, we're used to, like, having some sort of, like, music, even if it's, like, ambient sounds and stuff, all the time.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, you know, part of, for me, the joy and wonder of playing Breath of the Wild is really how thoughtful it all seems. And I think that use of music really adds to that. It ends up being the kind of open world experience that I've never had in any other game. That sort of slow, quiet meandering, going through the world, existing in that world. I had talked earlier, not earlier this year anymore, late last year, about how Final Fantasy 15 for me had made open world games make sense. And now I'm playing Zelda and it's open world and I'm absolutely eating it up. And it sort of makes me wonder if it's just not a difference in game design philosophy that works for me, that clicked for 15 and now Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
But there's something about where the moment-to-moment experiences that you have, and the music ties into this, as I just, you know, mentioned, to me, make every step I'm taking in this giant gargantuan world, every step has weight behind it. And it's really sunk home when you hear, you know, those notes of Epona's song playing while you're at the ranch, or you hear the haunting thud of guardians coming for you, and you know by the musical cues that, oh, things are ramping up now. It's just, the sound design in this game is unparalleled, and it should win awards for it.
Indeed. And I think that might be the first time a discussion ever leaked into the outro.
It might be. All right, well, with all of this having been said, it has been a lovely Sunday evening. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you either next week or next month. I have a trip to Japan coming up. It is going to impact schedule a little bit, but I'm hoping to have cool game stuff to talk about from Japan. Maybe even a dispatch from the road if I can get the tech working.
Cool.
But in the meantime, keep gaming, keep thinking, and I guess I'm a Zelda fan now?
It's dangerous to go alone. Take this.
All right, with all that out of the way, I have to ask, have you tasted a cartridge yet?
No.
They're disgusting.
You're disgusting.
So, for those of you out there in internet radio land who didn't hear this yet, Nintendo added a bittering agent to the cartridges, since they're so small, to, like, make sure that kids and animals and pets wouldn't eat them, which, by the way, such a Nintendo Touch thing to do. But is bittering agent, man, it's like, just tasting one of the Switch cartridges is like putting your tongue on a block of salt. It like stings and it's unpleasant. You really haven't tasted one? You're not even a little curious?
No.
All right.